This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for listening to 91.7 WVXU and 88.5 WMUB. In the September issue of Cincinnati Magazine, there's an article about saving the Delta Queen. It's written by Paul Schneider. He writes about efforts to bring the Delta Queen back to Cincinnati, or in the least, keep it from being merely a floating hotel and give it an opportunity to ply the waters of the mighty Mississippi and the Ohio River once again. Paul is also the author of the new book, Old Man River, The Mississippi River in North American History, and he's joining me on the phone right now. Hello, Paul, and welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
I was fascinated by the book about how in-depth you get in researching the history of the Mississippi, and we'll talk about your methods of research, including taking your own floats in the rivers. But I wanted to ask, where did you and when did you fall so much in love with the Mississippi to write a whole book about it?
Well, you know, what's interesting, I mean, because now I live down on the East Coast, but I grew up next to the Connecticut River, which is by no means even close to being the size of the rivers out there. Although where I lived, it looks similar in size to about what the Ohio looks like in Cincinnati. But I always was a river dreamer. The first thing I ever bought with my own money from picking corn was a canoe, and me and my buddies would go out on the Connecticut, on everything from a floating door to once quite foolhardily ice floes. So I was always more fascinated with rivers and dreamt of writing about one when I became a writer. And at first I was mostly interested in the Missouri. I don't know if that's just because of the lure of the West, but in talking with my editor, it became clear that the Mississippi has this sort of, well, everybody that has the lore and the mythology. And then once you start writing about the Mississippi, it becomes clear that you can't really tell the story without telling the story of the Ohio and the Missouri and the other rivers as well. So it became a bigger, ever bigger and ever muddier and ever more winding project description. So, but I'm very happy with the way it came out. So that's the thumbnail version of how I originally became infatuated with it.
And this is more than just a steamboat era on the mighty Mississippi and the Ohio and the Missouri. This is, you look back all the way into geological time about how the Mississippi was formed, how the Mississippi really is the backbone of the United States of America, and how important it was for our country when it was growing and how important it is and continues to be.
Yeah, you're right, and this is the kind of the third book that I've written that I guess you might call like a biography of a place or a geological area or feature, and I feel sort of as somebody who has a background primarily writing nonfiction and history, but also as a travel writer for magazines and a traveler. For me, what I love about history and about knowing the history of places is how it kind of improves my enjoyment of a place to know something, the way, you know, a baseball fan appreciation of the game is improved by knowing all the players and the history and the rules and the arcana. So it does go way back and to deep, kind of deep history. And it was one of the things that I learned actually in doing the book, you know, which I kind of knew in a kind of vague way, but didn't really know specifically, was just how crucial and critical the fate of the Ohio and Mississippi watershed were to the birth of the United States and the development of the United States. I mean, and in a way, you know, even whether or not Cincinnati would be an English-speaking city or a French-speaking city.
Mm-hmm. I was going to mention that, you know, we all think of it as the backbone of America, and I learned from reading your book, Old Man River, that really the French and the Spanish explorers in the 16th century were the ones who actually were the first to see what was happening beyond the Native Americans along those great waterways.
Yes, that's true, and even more, you know, the Spanish kind of, what's interesting about the Spanish experience in North America is, you know, even though they were so extravagantly successful at defeating kind of what we think of as far more organized and advanced South American, Native American cultures, the Incas and the Aztecs, than what are typically portrayed as, you know, the Native Americans of North America. Basically, three big Spanish conquistador armies tried to come to North America, and they got shown the door, let's just say.
That's right.
But basically, you know, De Soto, who's the most famous of them, you know, ends up buried in the Mississippi River. And then the French kind of come in a completely different fashion. Instead of with big armies from the south, they kind of trickle down from the Great Lakes in canoes and with, you know, maybe three French guys and a missionary and a whole bunch of their Indian Native American friends from the Great Lakes. So they really did explore both the Ohio and, of course, all of those French names, not so much on the Ohio but on the Mississippi and down to New Orleans, you know, come from that piece of the history.
I'm speaking with Paul Schneider. He's the author of Old Man River, the Mississippi River in North American History, which also shares quite a bit of history of our own Ohio River here in Cincinnati. He's written an article for the September issue of Cincinnati Magazine about the Delta Queen that we'll be talking about in just a moment. As part of your research, Paul, I don't know, this sounded like kind of a dream to me. You got to go and kayak and canoe and boat down quite long stretches of river for your research for this book.
Yes, I did. I mean, interestingly, early on, you know, like probably 100 other writers a year, the first thing I kind of pitched to my editor was, oh, hey, you know, I want to go down a river and write about going down a river. And I wanted to take my son, who at that time was 15, and my editor was wisely said, you know, that book has been written a whole lot of times, and maybe you want to branch out. And in a way, that grew into basically being this sort of broader, more ambitious historical book. And the good part is it allowed me to then say, well, I'm just going to take the trips I really, really want to take. And so I did do a lot of traveling in pieces. It's not a book about my one journey. But perhaps most, you know, interestingly to your listeners, and in fact, one of the best trips I took was I basically did the entire Ohio River from did most of the Allegheny too, but from Pittsburgh all the way down and then down below to down below Memphis in a little 14-foot aluminum boat with like a wooden deck. And I just kind of pitched a pup tent on the deck when I wasn't near a town, or came into town when I was and stayed in a hotel and took a shower. And it was, boy, was that really fun. And it was kind of a dream come true for me. And I would encourage anybody to get out on it. The Ohio is just so unbelievably beautiful from top to bottom. So
you talk about that experience in that 14-foot aluminum boat, which wasn't that much different, shy of that outboard motor, than the flatboats and keelboats that really began life on the Ohio and the Mississippi and the settlements all up and down the waterways.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the history of boats on the waterway in itself is just fascinating and fun. I mean, you know, before there were railroads and before there were even steamboats, everybody traveled on pretty much anything that they could concoct that would float. But most common early on were these flatboats that were basically just a box with an oar at the back, and they were mostly built up in like Brownsville and in Pittsburgh, and then people would come down and drop off and settle along the way. And so, yes, it was that way. And I chose to do the Ohio section with a motor primarily because, as most of your listeners probably know, most of the river, almost the entire river, is basically dammed up and doesn't have as much current as a lazy paddler like myself might.
I was going to say.
So when I was on a lower Mississippi where the current still flows, I was usually in a kayak or a canoe or something. But I'm ambitious, but I didn't want to paddle 900 miles of flat water.
And that is, well, for many of us here doing our annual paddle fest down on the Ohio River, we can tell you how slow that mighty Ohio really flows these days.
Yeah. I mean, it's still great to paddle, but if you're going to do the whole thing, as I was, I didn't have the time to push it that far.
And the view from the river really is different. You reveal a lot of it in your book, and something I've noticed on my travails and travels on the river, both motorized and otherwise, that a lot of industry, a lot of life that happens going on those riverbanks, you know, no matter whether you're on the Ohio or the Mississippi or the Allegheny.
Yeah, what's wonderful about it is sort of how it changes and how how it grows from a tiny trickle. Obviously, it's obvious a river does that, but to travel it is really to sort of see it happen. And even the industry itself, which as somebody who comes primarily, as a nature lover and a traveler and a wilderness advocate, I kind of expected to be a little more, I won't say horrified, but a little bit more. I was unprepared for actually kind of how starkly beautiful even the kind of rustiest, clangingest, steam puffing, industries outside of Wheeling or down, the power plants, can be. Obviously, there's a lot of environmental implications to what goes on the river, but there's something noble as well about the human part of it.
I love how you describe the mountains of coal that are, then fed into the power plants, how there's a power plant on every flat corner where the Indians and settlers used to land, how mountains of steel in the scrapyards, Atlanta, just some wonderful imagery as you take that trip.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, no, that was, and that really is the Ohio more than where I was on the Mississippi. It's quite remarkable, and particularly if you have, if you've read or done the research of all that early history, a lot of those little places, that is where the Indians camped, or there were some battle in the French and Indian War, and it is a remarkable thing. And there are places certainly in Kentucky and Ohio where you pretty much see the coal coming out of the hill on one side of the mountain and going into the power plant on the other side.
Do I remember something in the book where you're talking about, when we're talking about how busy the Mississippi is, where 90% of our agricultural exports travel on the Mississippi?
Yeah, that's the number. I didn't count it up myself, so I'm not going to say, it's not 89 or it's not 91, but that's sort of the official, government numbers. And you get out there and it's you can see it. And it, the barges are just moving up and down, and the further down you get, the bigger the barges are, and some of them, they even smell like corn. The corn ones do. There was one time I was out in the boat, and I was like, you find yourself really hungry, and you're kind of like, why am I so hungry right now? And then I realized, oh, this whole stretch of the river smells like corn muffins. And then, sure enough, around the corner came this giant barge of corn.
Well, down to the Delta Queen, which you wrote about for the September issue of Cincinnati Magazine, movement afloat. Of course, the Queen got grounded a few years ago due to the law that says no overnight passengers on wooden boats, has been sitting as a floating hotel in Chattanooga. And now, a possibility might come back to Cincinnati, but Cincinnati has, even though Cincinnati is its namesake or has been its home port for so many years, has a little competition and bringing the Delta Queen back onto the river.
Yeah, that's true. It's a changing cast of competition, but there's talk of it going to Sacramento. There's talk of it maybe going to New York and even Louisville, which already has, they already have one. I've heard are sort of making moves to try to get her, and it's. The city that gets her, I firmly believe, it's an asset and a value. I live quite near, as I mentioned in the article, I live pretty near to New Bedford, Massachusetts, which used to be the whaling capital of the world. And, they let the last whaling boat go 30, 40 years ago, and boy, would they like to have it back.
While someone else is making all the money on it. And yes, I remember, it was just part of Cincinnati, the Delta Queen rolling in there about Derby time after visiting Louisville racing the bell down there.
Bell, that was a famous race, yeah.
It seems that it is part of this city, but, how do you feel about the Delta Queen and the law that says no passengers? After all, in researching your book, you know about all the tragedies that happened during the steamboat era on the mighty Mississippi.
Well, the law is probably a good law in the you know, in the long run of things. But it's more a measure of, it's not a new law that grounded the Delta Queen. It's just yet another measure of how, you know, whatever side of the political spectrum you are on, how dysfunctional Congress, our Congress has become. Because for many, 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 many years, they would pass the exemption for the Delta Queen, because the Delta Queen should have an exemption to this rule, which is basically that you can't have a large wooden boat taking overnight passengers, which may or may not be a good rule. But it was always perfectly easily bipartisanly passed, and then it just became, you know, yet another thing that got caught up in the catfights down in Washington. So, you know, hopefully reason will prevail, and whether or not Cincinnatians get the boat back, the boat should be back on the water, in my mind.
So in your research for your book, how many stories of the Delta Queen, or what kind of role did the Delta Queen play in your new book, Old Man River?
The Delta Queen, you know, herself is not that big a boat in the book, you know, because the Delta Queen, even though she is basically one of the last of her kind, is a relatively later riverboat. So there's an awful lot about the golden age of riverboats, which really was probably, one would say, from about 1820 to the Civil War or a little beyond. And you know, and she's the last, whereas the Delta Queen is more from around the turn of the century originally, 1910, I can't remember offhand, maybe 1910 or something.
Right, right.
But, you know, so there's an awful lot about the, well, not an awful lot. There's a wonderful a lot about the kind of golden age of steamboats and the whole steamboat culture. And there's less about the Delta Queen in particular in the book. But, you know, the whole riverboat industry, particularly for places like Cincinnati and on the Ohio, you know, in addition to riverboats being this kind of romantic era of river travel. And there's some funny stuff in the book about how there were plenty of people for whom traveling on a riverboat was not a pleasant experience.
Yes.
But they also are pretty much the birth of the first heavy industry. I mean, the reason there's so much growth and success in industry up and down the Ohio was that's where the steamboats, you know, were being built, and the steam engines were being built, and all manner of other industry that came along with that, because, you know, they were preceded railroads, they preceded automobiles. They were kind of one of the first really heavy industries, particularly powered by steam, as opposed to sort of some of the cotton mills and stuff in New England that were water powered. So it's a big piece of the history of the river beyond just a pretty boat, you know, and a kind of funky old time way.
Paul Schneider, he's the author of an article in the September issue of Cincinnati Magazine talking about Save the Delta Queen, and the author of the new book, Old Man River, The Mississippi River in North American History. You can find out more about Paul Schneider and his work at our website, wvxu.org, and find his book where books are sold. Well, thank you for your time, Paul, and thank you for the many river tales.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7.